Well, it's that time of year again.
Yep. Comes faster every year.
You look so cheerful.
I hope you're going to get this place properly done up for the show.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I'll be running around to that.
It's not exactly Christmassy. In fact, no. it looks a bit sh**.
No, calm down. We will make a run and we will get the finest decorations for you
that Poundland can provide.
Good. In the meantime, here, you can put that on.
Oh, what? So. Okay, let's not break studios.
I can't be in the show because I am nativating.
You're nativating?
I am nativating. I'm not in it.
Are you the Virgin Mary?
In your dreams? in your dreams.
I don't know. Can we get a manger and fit him?
The Virgin Mary doesn't sit in the manger.
You don't know that. You don't know that she didn't birth directly into the manger. These things can happen, dude. Oh. These things can happen.
What have I done?
In the Christmas story, it wouldn't be the most unbelievable of all of the things that happened. So, there. Anyway, I'm nativating, okay?
Yeah.
If she births into the manger during that will be quite a sight.
I don't think we need the modern performance art version of the nativity.
Anyway, the Weekender.
Can you imagine?
I guarantee there has got to be a small, crappy theatre in New York City where this has been done.
We need to go there.
I don't want to go back to New York.
Oh, if only we had Santa's magic dust or something to take us there. But we don't. But even though I can't be in this show to share it with you, please do a good job, I think we can spill out some of our Christmas spirit.
Definitely.
So let's give away two prizes.
Okay.
In the vein of new beginnings and starting something new and getting ready for the new year.
Mm-hmm. So just gonna
I want to give away. Is that playing with your OCD, Sam? Is it?
No, it's just that the mic was about to go off the table.
I want to give away two Start Collecting sets. It could be either Age of Sigmar or 40K.
Ooh. Right? That's a great question.
Which one would you pick if it were you?
You see, I don't know, because I started a 40K army this year, and I didn't pick one of them.
Yeah.
I didn't pick a Star Collecting. I went for one of the Christmas Battle Forces, which were beautiful.
I'm not giving one away.
I know that.
Justin is giving away his Christmas Battle Force.
Oh, you're getting me one for Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
I have to give it away. Fair enough.
I would go for the Tree Men.
Yeah. Oh, Sylvaneth.
I know Ryan has plans for them.
He's been eyeing them up.
Oh, beautiful models. Mm. Absolutely beautiful. Or I would go for the Fire Slayers.
No, I do not like them.
Man, I love them. But I would remodel them so that they all have their ghoulies hanging out. Just to wind him up.
And that's why Warhammer Fantasy Battles ones were better.
That's why I play Warhammer 40,000.
If you want to be in with a chance of winning one of two of the Start Collecting sets, your choice. But anything that's in the current range, you can have it. We'll gladly send it to you. What do they have to do?
Comment. Comment below. Let us know what you're doing for Christmas.
Yeah, let us know your
Christmas gaming plans.
Yeah. Right. I'd also like to wish each and every one of you a massive happy Christmas. I hope you have a wonderful holiday season with your families. Thank you so much for watching all year round. And thank you to everyone that sent us at the team a Christmas card or a Christmas postcard. It was so, so appreciated. We also got a gift, Justin, which I imagine is for you. This is from Gaz.
You know, I've been wondering who sent that. I should have known.
This is the magic unicorn, okay, that fires rainbows out of his butt. Look. So, yeah, Gaz sent this, Justin. I think it's for you, man.
Where are you going to put it? Right.
Yeah?
Rainbow. Three finger bands.
Right. Oh, that is so cool, man. Yeah. So there.
All right.
This
is actually a great gift for me. Do you know why?
Why?
I've done none of my Christmas shopping yet.
Actually, I think it's a really good gift for you because it inspired me. I think we'll set up a mail order service now and you can single-handedly man the mail order service and every package will be wrapped with rainbow unicorn butt tape. It'll be amazing.
We'll see.
And when you run out of that, he also sent us a follow-up supply of beautiful tapes, Justin. These are going to make our day.
All right.
So whenever you're sending out the prizes from now on, for the rest of this year, Justin, everyone that gets a prize from the Beast of War studio, okay, let's get a little bit of rainbow tape on there just to make their day. Yeah?
Just to know that I've had my hands
just
on it.
Just to know that Justin's had his hands on your prize. We'll also include a small bottle of detergent.
Well, you know, you have to give them a little bit of Purell. It is the season of flu as well as everything else.
It is. And you just spread it around, man, to your heart's content.
No, I didn't get the Lurgy this year. Other people have got the Lurgy this year.
Well, I've wished them Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
I'd like to wish you guys Merry Christmas. It's been a real pleasure weekending with you this year. I've had an absolute blast. Mm. And I can't wait for next year. Mm. So I will leave you to it. Go and get this place decorated, because right now they're going to have to do a mega cut because I'm about to open this for XLBS.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the Weekender. It's Christmas!
Ish. We're getting there.
We're nearly there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to just keep things a little light on this episode, and we're going to be talking about our Geek Guide to Christmas and gaming over Christmas. Mm. Yeah. You guys looking forward to Christmas?
Well, yeah. I always eat too much, and then go comatose on the sofa, like many people do. There's no shame.
Yeah. Oh, I almost forgot. I'm Sam from On Tabletop. Across from me is Jerry.
Hello.
Also from On Tabletop.
Yeah. And Justin.
Also from On Tabletop.
Unfortunately, Ben can't be with us this week, but still here to celebrate.
You know, we got a once-in-a-lifetime trip to North Pole to see Santa.
Okay.
We'll pass that up.
So, before we begin, just got one update. The awards... Our award show will be happening next year. We're aiming for beginning of February. This year, we're running it a little different to how we've done it before. It'll start off with us putting forward our list of nominations, and then those will go up for a community vote in January time. So it gives you a nice time to get your votes in. But while we are the ones compiling the nomination list this time, we are open to your suggestions. So if you have any suggestions for nominations for best board game, best miniatures game, we'll get a list of all the categories in the show notes below. Be sure to leave us a comment and let us know, and we'll take a look. Okay, moving on.
Mm-hmm.
Christmas.
Yes.
What are you guys doing for it? We all have our own Christmas traditions.
Same thing I do every year, Pinky. Yeah. I'm going down to visit my mum for 2 weeks.
Sorry, well, I'm going to eating my mince pie with brandy sauce. Yeah. I'm not allowed to drink on the show, but this is brandy
that
custard, so it doesn't
cooked.
Count. Yeah.
Now, for me, every year at Christmas, it's a time for me just to step away from the office and go spend time with my family. So I'll be going down to Newcastle to visit my mum. And my mum always, on Christmas Eve, does turkey toasties with a little bit of stuffing. And I don't know why, but that there's something I look forward to every year. It's just that first turkey toastie when the turkey's just finished cooking, just piping hot out of the oven, and it's always great.
Mm. How about you, Jerry? Any Christmas traditions?
I didn't realise your family were German. Celebrate Christmas on Christmas Eve with the turkey toasties.
It's just how we do. You know, it's been done in my family since I was knee-high to a grasshopper.
The Germanic Justin. Learn something new every day.
I'm not Germanic Justin. I'm part Justin. Scottish, that's about it.
So Germanic. I do the Christmas dinner every year, so so no, Christmas is terrible. Christmas is a hellhole. I hate Christmas. I can't see Christmas far enough.
Sam, we got on the wrong hat.
Oh, yeah. Should have gone the bar humbug.
So, yeah. So
and this one keeps falling down.
I just do the dinner, and then I retreat to my room, and someone can call me, you know, 27th, 28th, when Christmas is long departed, and then get back to normality.
Yeah. So you hibernate.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a fair choice.
I think so.
Now, for me, of course, Christmas is a big family thing. I've got quite a large family, so it's all getting together. And gaming is a big part of that. I wrote an article that will be going out on the site, I think, Christmas Day. And that is games that will not cause an argument. Because I think we've all been there when someone's brought out the Monopoly.
Solitaire.
Wait, yeah. How do you argue in solitaire? It's a one-player game.
There you go. That's a game that won't cause an argument. Anything else with multiple people, you're just asking for trouble.
See, my family does not do board games at Christmas. No. But this year, my little nephew Matthew, I've picked him up Star Wars Destiny because he's just about to leave primary school, and I think he's just at the right age to start hooking him into some gaming. See if I can get him away from playing football.
Yeah, that was Star Wars Destiny. That I remember that one popping up in our group chat.
And it popped up in the local TK Maxx, and I was just like, gone,
gone. Justin-shaped dust cloud in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, it's funny you say that. My family aren't big board gamers or tabletop gamers. Mm. You know, we've tried going down that route with them before, but aside from me, no. When my cousins were younger, I used to be able to bring out Munchkin, and they were obsessed with it to the point that I now I can't stand playing Munchkin anymore. Just but
they're not just bring out a new version.
They've brought out so many versions.
Yes. Yeah, I know. At the core, they're all Munchkin.
Yeah.
It's the equivalent of turkey. You have on Christmas Day, that's fine. You have leftovers on Boxing Day, that's a bit annoying. Day after that, you're currying it. Munchkin is the same.
Wait, yeah. You've curried turkey?
I've never curried a Munchkin.
I have, but that's just because I couldn't face playing it anymore with the cousins. Now, but writing that article and thinking about my own family... the big one for us is actually video games. Mm. The main one these days is with the release of the Crash Bandicoot HD remaster. Sorry, this is going to be a big nostalgia hit for me. We bring that out, and my dad and I continuously die and swap the controller while my mum and sister, who do not play video games at all, shout advice.
Best way. It's like backseat driving.
Yeah. But with a view to... families who don't not playing the who aren't into tabletop games. Mm. I thought, what a good way to maybe introduce it around family events, where get them involved in a game.
Honestly, this year we've actually seen a lot of games come out that have been reasonably light, so they're not really rules heavy, not really abstract. I mean, I would look to Devere because some of the stuff they're doing, really nice, colorful, bright little games that you can lay out. They're not heavy to learn, and you can get the concepts into a non-gamer's head really quickly.
Mm. Jerry, have you ever tried introducing any of your family to like miniature gaming or anything like that? No.
My brother used to play with me, but no, the rest of the family wouldn't be interested in that sort of thing. My brother would still role play, but he left tabletop games behind a long time ago. Mm. But it's one of those, a lot of it depends on the family as well.
Yeah.
If people have younger family members kicking around, I can see that being more interesting or more of an uplift. The idea of getting my 78-year-old mother into playing something, can't see that happening somehow.
I love the idea of you getting your 78-year-old mother into Kill Team.
Even she would just look at the 40k stuff and go, it was so much better in the old days.
I actually did have a really funny one in the store last week.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, so it's coming to Christmas and people are buying great gifts for each other. Yeah, an old lady walked in and started picking up stuff off the shelves, and I was just like, is this the oldest female wargamer ever? No, she was picking up for her grandkid.
Oh, of course. That would be kind of epic, though, get a granny into 40K or something.
It's one thing myself and John realized a few years back is that whenever we're all old men in the nursing home, we're all going to be listening to heavy metal, and we won't be listening to it full boot because we like it loud. It's because we can't bloody well hear it.
Sounds about right.
It's going to be an unusual generation going forward, you know, because, well, I'm part of the last generation that was raised pre-internet, but everybody after that, God knows what they're going to be like when they're older. I imagine terrible. Old people are terrible. They're like wrinkly young people.
You just think now they'll have a way to actually put their grumblings out there whenever they're in the nursing home.
I like this because right now we've got a kind of a microcosm of Christmas families going on. Two people talking about how much food is they gonna love eating, one person grumbling in the corner.
Hmm.
Yeah,
very much so.
Filling a vital role.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
True enough.
Well, I mean, like we always do the tour of the family. So whenever I was younger, my mum used to get like the entire family into one house. Mm-hmm. It was cramped. My mum comes from a large Irish family, go figure. But these days, everybody goes off and does their own thing, but we always do a bit of a tour around the different family members. So the aunts, the uncles, the cousins, and the second cousins. So mm-hmm. It's always fun just catching up and seeing how they've been doing over the last year. Because we don't meet up enough through the year.
Yeah, true enough. In terms of getting your nephew, was it, into the Kage, how old did you say he is?
He's just leaving primary school, so yeah. P7, so I think he's around 10, 11.
Yeah.
Is he the oldest of your nephews?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And he's a wee superstar. He's a great laugh, really smart kid. He actually went to Barcelona this year for a football tournament.
Oh, I remember you saying that.
Yeah, actually, it's funny because on Facebook they started posting pictures of it, and there's this beautiful photograph of Matthew going up for a header, and his face is just scrunched up, going, "Don't hit me in the face! Oh, crap, it's going to hit me in the face!"
So, if that's going to be, if you're going to be using this card game to try and introduce tabletop gaming to them, what could be the next move? What's next Christmas's present? If it takes off.
If it takes off, honestly, I wouldn't even wait till next Christmas. It would probably be his birthday, which isn't insanely late in the year. So I might actually bring him into the visitor center here and get him a start collecting box and actually start, you know, teaching him how to work with modeling, the basic skills that you need to actually, you know, get your models off the sprue, get them all cleaned up, get them built, get them primed, and get painting them. Now, obviously, I am not giving my 11-year-old nephew a rattle can because that's just a bad plan. I'll do that myself.
You wouldn't go for something like X-Wing or Armada, where they can learn a more complicated tabletop game without having to worry about the hobby side of it right off the bat?
You see, honestly, for accessibility and guaranteeing games, with us having the Games Workshop store out the front and the Pro store, and having most people playing Warhammer 40k or Age of Sigmar in the place, to actually get him constantly doing something, I think that's more important than actually having something where he's not having to do the pre-work to it.
Hmm. I can see your point of view.
You can disagree with it.
Yeah, I am.
That's fair enough. So, before we wrap up this topic, of course, there is one question you always have to ask around this. Tell me, what are you hoping to get? What tabletop gaming stuff are you guys hoping that you'll find in Santa's sack?
For me, honestly, just more Primaris Marines. If I could get like a Redemptor Dreadnought to add to my forces, I'd be super happy.
Mm-hmm.
Gary?
Socks. I want socks. I'm an old gamer. If something comes out and I want it, I buy it. Yeah. Which is why I have so much stuff unpainted. And you know, I was saying to John earlier, I pre-ordered a flight of Valkyries when they came out. So I have them still sitting in their sealed boxes from when they were released. How many years ago? The shrink wraps never even come off those.
Wow.
More tiny fighting men, not really high on my list of stuff. But socks are excellent. I go through socks like you wouldn't believe. Size 13 feet. You know, they don't really make socks that big, so I just kind of destroy them. So socks are excellent. I want more socks.
Now we
socks. We have Glossy. Glossoli. I got socks from a friend of mine, old Gildy from Warcraft, who I got into gaming across the vast distance that is Norway to Ireland. I just sent him an army of dwarves because I know he likes dwarves. And suckered him in that way. And he had a character called Tumnus. So I would always complain that he'd stolen my sock at a Family Guy. So I came home the other day and there was a Christmas card and a pair of socks from Glossy. So thank you very much for giving me back my sock.
Here's one for you. How much of a break do you think most gamers out there take during the holiday season?
Well, I remember when I was running my own game of Vampire the Masquerade, and like holiday season wasn't a break for me. It was a chance to instead run a little one shot and just do something nice for my gaming group.
Yeah. It's just at the start of the week there, me and some of the ones on the Discord server, we actually set up for a new D&D campaign.
Yeah.
We got the characters all built, and then at the end of it, it was just like, all right, guys, we'll see you in the new year. What, we don't play yet? Aw.
Well, my Scion group there, we're playing over Skype. We are taking a break, but I've been assured by our games master that when we come back, it's going to be a Christmas special. So this seems to be something a lot of GMs do around this time, just kind of take a break from whatever story they're running to either do something nice for Christmas or have a nice little separate adventure or destroy their players even further. My Christmas special, I kind of made it up on the fly in Vampire the Masquerade, and without my intending it, it became the darkest thing I have ever run. it started off with me basically setting them up so that they thought they were going to fight Krampus, only for them to discover, oh crap, we just killed a guy in a costume, we've broken the masquerade, instant panic. But then I realized, wait, why is this guy running around dressed as Krampus, who is a monster that kidnaps children? I need to give him a motive. And as you can think, it spiraled down. It was one of those moments where I was hating my brain every plot twist.
There's always room in the Sabbat.
Yeah?
You know, if the Camarilla go horribly wrong for your grip, jump on board.
Fair. Are you still running your Call of Cthulhu game?
No, that's why they swapped over to D&D. The Cthulhu is finished. And I, you know, successful all over.
Yeah.
Rob wasn't stitched up. Well, he was stitched up. Then he was gutted. Then he fled.
No, literally got it?
Oh, literally got it. He ran off into the sand dunes outside Sligo, holding himself together, possessed by, you know, some sort of unusual entity from the Middle East. Yeah. And, yeah, that was about the best. I think nobody died, per se. I'm sure Rob's still alive in there somewhere.
Screaming incoherently.
Yeah, but the rest all just sort of ended up being jailed for various crimes they committed while attempting to solve the puzzle there. So
yeah,
there's something I would love to do. I would love to see what it would look like to do Call of Cthulhu Christmas. I think that could make for a very fun twisted adventure.
There's nothing fun about Cthulhu.
Race to Sun Zero, I love it.
That's not a race.
Now, funny you say that. I know Jim Ariskany has an article planned to go out around Christmas week. Part of his Christmas Carnage series.
The assault on the North Pole?
Yeah, he's doing that again. Mm-hmm. And I did see a lot of octopi in the in the pictures. Yeah. And so, yeah, we may be seeing a very Cthulhu Christmas.
He does get everywhere.
Yeah, a very Cthulhu Christmas. I think I've just decided on my Christmas cards for next year. I'm going to have to ask Lance to mock that up.
All right, I thought you were going to do a short story.
Nah. I've written Cthulhu stories before. They're fun because I can take the mic quite easily. The first story I got paid for was a story about Cthulhu living in a fridge.
Must be one hell of a fridge.
Yeah, you know, quite literally.
He had to get rid of a relay. He's downsizing.
Yeah, well, that was inspired by an actual run-in with when I stayed in China for that month and a half. The flat I stayed in had this fridge, and none of us dared open it.
Oh,
because there was mold on the outside.
Oh, so it was slowly being consumed.
Yeah, no one dared open that fridge.
Quality.
Yeah. Anyway. I think that's us finished with that one. Let's move on to the news.
Yes, the first piece has me really excited.
Okay, can you bring it up for us?
Yeah, so the news piece is the new animated series that's coming out from Games Workshop.
Ah, yes.
And so it's going to be following the Blood Angels, but the really key thing for me with this is the guy that's doing this, that they've hired to do it, actually did the fan-based one. So Hell's Reach, if you remember it.
Yeah, I remember it.
And it's one of those things, because whenever we first saw this guy come to light, he had basically just started. In fact, I've got his video thing here, and I'll quickly show you. So here's what the initial animation looked like. So he took the audiobook, revoiced some of it, and, you know, for someone just starting out, that's looking pretty cool, right? Then seeing the progression to his latest one, number 10, let's just jump forward. Here's what his animation looks like now.
That is incredible.
So that progression of skill for me and seeing it being recognized is the new story here. Not just that we're getting a 40K animated series, but it's someone who was doing something completely unrelated with Games Workshop, completely off his own back, his own time, and now has that recognition to go, all right, you have done something very goddamn cool. You're now going to make one for us. You now have a budget. You're working with Aaron Dembski-Bowden, who I think is one of the finest writers in Black Library, who just so happens to live just up the road, I believe.
He lives in Ireland, I think, yeah.
And it's just so, so cool to see this.
Hmm.
Doesn't he work for EA?
I'm not sure if the guy works for EA or no.
I think he's an animator for EA.
Right.
Which is one of the reasons he's quite good at animating.
Yeah. Well, it will be good to see what he can do with the 40K universe now he's got the official backing and the budget that I would assume goes alongside it.
That and the last attempt at this we saw was, I believe, the Space Marine movie?
Ultramarine.
Yeah, and I remember...
I paid John £20 for that movie.
Dude, you got had.
Mm.
I remember myself and Lloyd went to see it in London when it was the premiere. And my God, the soundtrack, the scoring was gorgeous. It was uplifting. It was epic. But the animation was so crap.
I remember that. You came back singing its absolute praises immediately.
Yeah,
after.
Because I had been dying for a 40K movie, and it was the first time I had ever seen a 40K movie. I was willing to forgive a lot at that point, but as time has went past, I've been a bit more critical of it.
Mm.
And this was how many years ago?
I can't remember.
It's at least six.
Yeah, this was round about when we both started with Beast of War.
Well, if it's when I started, it's eight.
Yeah, around that. So what do we think this Blood Angels one will be about? What do you think the focus will be, Joe?
Is it just Blood Angels, though?
I think
it's
it
called,
is.
Because it's called the Angels of Death, which was the Blood Angel Dark Angel Codex name. Because Angels of Death is a catch-all for all the winged things. So obviously there's Blood Angels kicking around there in the animation, but it'll be interesting to see if it's just staying with one thing or if it'll be jumping around through various parts of them.
My hope is they're going to explore some of the deeper psyches of the Blood Angels in particular, because they're one of those chapters that have the...
Nutters.
A little bit. They have the Red Thirst, which makes them want to drink blood, and they have the Black Rage, which leaves them reliving the life of their Primarch, eventually each of them thinking they are their Primarch. So I really want to see them tackle that, but I also want to see the nobility of the Blood Angels come out in this. Because I actually just finished listening to Dante on Audible, and just hearing how they're made, how they react, and how they work in fights and stuff was really cool to see. I'm moving on to Devastation of Baal as soon as I can.
I'll admit, I'm not that excited for this series. But that's just me personally, because I find...
Space vampires.
Yeah, I find space marines in general a bit dull.
They are, because they've sanitized them over the years.
Yeah.
They used to be... of more like 2000 AD Dread. You know, it was very space fascists, and they were nasty, and they had field police. Field police have gone away. When was the last time you've seen a member of the field police on the force to make sure the space marines weren't doing something naughty on a battlefield? So they've gone from being the fist of a fascist intergalactic empire that sort of came down hard on anybody who was corrupting to be the sort of the super good guys. I think something like Inquisitors, Rogue Traders, or Imperial Guard would have made a more interesting one, because it's not quite as everything so shiny and nice these days.
Yeah.
Unless they have an Inquisitor with a bunch of silver stakes hunting the space vampires down, which is, I'm all for that. That'd be great.
That'd be kind of epic, actually, yeah. Speaking of that, I like the idea of an animated series exploring a rogue trader, and I'm surprised they didn't go for that for their first backed web series, because that actually gives them an excuse to explore so many different aspects of the universe rather than just this one specific thing.
I think it's the money shot with the Space Marines.
Yeah, it's the most recognizable thing in the range. Yeah.
Whereas if they throw out, you know, here's a Space Marine web series, people go, oh, Space Marines. If you go, Rogue Trader, people go,
what's a Rogue Trader?
Isn't that the film about Nick Leeson and destroying Bering's Bank with Obi-Wan Kenobi in it? Isn't that was cool. I'm pretty sure that was Rogue Trader, isn't it? Is this it? They're doing it on the web now. Why are they doing it on the web? I don't care about Rogue Traders. They brought down the economy twice. They're terrible.
Well, maybe if we see if this one is very successful and good quality, maybe we'll see them branch out into other parts of the lore.
I imagine they would.
Yeah.
I don't see why they would maintain such a narrow focus on just the space vampires.
Yeah.
When there's so much more they could be doing. I mean, the quintessential, and even the Inquisitor, doing something like a series based off the old Inquisitor Draco books, where you've got an Inquisitor who is backed up with a navigator, a squat engineer, a assassin, and there was somebody else on board who was a git, but I can't remember who it was. But it was just such a, you know, it was like the crew of the Red Dwarf. They were a weird little ensemble cast going around and, you know, doing their own thing sometimes, but always feeding back to the Inquisitor. And he was always butting heads with other Inquisitors. And that, I think, would be a far more interesting thing to explore, because you can have Jane Steeler cults, you can explore things like the Officio Sassinorum, or whatever it's called these days. You could have all of these things in just this one little group, where, you know, you can bump into tower squats or whatever you want to bump into, because he's always moving about, and he does a lot of stuff with the Eldar and hunting down the webway. So I think if this is successful, they would really owe it to themselves to go for something like a Rogue Trader or an Inquisitor, where they can explore the whole universe that they built up without just going, here's some guys in red armor and they're punching somebody, because that's more or less all it's going to be a lot of the time.
I will admit, when I first saw it, my first thoughts when I saw just the red armor and everything was, imagine if this was like red versus blue, just a unit of Blood Angels and a unit of Ultramarines at two ends of a box canyon.
See, I have to wonder, are they going to do the stories as like little one-shots and just have a completely new story every time, or are they going to go for a more expansive storyline?
Well, it's certainly going to be one that we'll have to keep a close eye on as it comes out. Okay, next up on the news,
we have
the Rylos spaceport from Impudent Mortal.
Yeah, this looks really good.
So, Rylos spaceport, first off, great name. As anybody who's watched the fantastic film The Last Starfighter knows, Rylos was the home base for the starfighters trying to stop the Kudan Armada. This, unfortunately, doesn't even contain Grig with a little twirly orange thing, because Grig and Death Blossom was awesome. But this setup here for the likes of Infinity or Dead Zone 40K, even anything like that there, it's a really nice generic set of stuff, but it's got that lived-in look. It's got that sort of space truckers, sort of aliens, even aliens for that matter.
Space truckers, that crap fest.
Space truckers is how they describe the original aliens. They are space truckers.
Yeah,
they're just, it's a group of people doing some haulage in space, which is why it's such an interesting film. So having playing out something like an AVP style thing there, where you've got a squads of Marines and one alien ripping. It's come in on a transport and all it's going to hell together. Because you don't always need massive, great, grim battlefields to put things on.
Or tight corridors.
Yeah, having it on a little spaceport in the middle of Rylos is ideal.
See, I'd maybe use 7TV's rule set with this. Do it as it's on a, the movie set kind of thing that they do. Although I am loving just the inspiration I'm seeing for a couple of the spaceships, if I go down to them quickly. Because you've got one of them, which is looking like the Jupiter from the new Lost in Space TV series. And these look as if they're inspired off of the X-Wing a little bit.
There's a new Lost in Space TV series.
On Netflix.
Oh, why won't they just let it die?
Because TV producers and movie producers have run out of original ideas, and now they're recycling everything they can lay their hands on for nostalgia.
They've not run out. They're just too afraid to use anything. But yeah, all of them are quite nice. I mean, they've got that VTOL look.
Yeah.
The two at the top corner, the little one-seater things,
look
very Guardians of the Galaxy. You can see them coming out of something like Nowhere with, Star-Lord or Rocket Raccoon.
Yes, yeah. I would absolutely love to see rules for just hijacking these and having swooping them around that little spaceport area.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I do like your idea of using the setup for 7TV. I think that would work very well.
Well, I mean, I know they explore all the different movie and TV genres, so why not do something that is just a sci-fi supervillain, in the local spaceport. You're trying to track him down, he's trying to escape on one of the ships, but you have to figure out which one it is.
Oh, that's a good scenario, yeah. I will say, as soon as I saw this setup, I know it wasn't in the film very much, but my initial thought was the Fifth Element.
Yeah, you could run that.
I'm sure there'd be
hassle-free. No, Heresy Miniatures make a Dallas Corbin and a Lelou multipass.
Does she have a multipass?
She might have a multipass. She got a gun. Yeah. I'll give her that.
I do remember there was a Lelou Dallas inspired character in Slaughterball, if you remember that sports game, who had multiple arms, so her special rule was multipass.
Yeah, there actually was recently a video I saw where a real-life opera singer sang Pava Laguna's song, and my God, it was gorgeous.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
And I still remember the character's name. Wow.
Okay, last one. We have My First Castle Panic. This one caught your eye, I know.
Yeah, it catches my eye because, again, I'm in that mindset of getting people into games and having something that's that's simplified like this that I can then take and say, okay, so we've played this one. Let's actually try and get you the more complicated one now. So it's those inroads into the hobby, which we're seeing more and more of. Because if you think the guys from HABA have been doing it for years, and they do such great work with it. Because the games are fun, but even if you're an adult playing with your kid, you can still have the same level of fun as your kid. This looks like it's really simplified, but it's something you're going to have a lot of fun with. Yeah. Get those mechanics built into your kids.
Yeah. Get your mechanics built into your kids.
This is how it works, right?
Time for a cyborg, then.
What, you don't have an upload port?
Okay, have either of you played Castle Panic at all?
No,
but I have seen it played, and I know the concept of it is that you have waves upon waves of monsters rolling in to try and destroy your castle. In the main game, you're surrounded on all sides. In this one, they've simplified it so that it's a single track that you're having to worry about.
Yeah, I have actually played Castle Panic a couple of times. It's I wouldn't say it's one of my favorites, but it's definitely one that has seen a lot of use in my gaming group. It's one that would be brought out whenever we just want something quick and fun. Mm. And that sort of tower defense is a great one. And it's a simple concept. I could see it lending itself well for a simpler kids game.
It's one thing I like with board games. So it's one thing I've said before is war games for me are now work. Board games are my fun time. And I like board games because the concepts you're working with are a lot lighter. So long as you're not playing something like Twilight Imperium, you're okay.
I'm dying to play Twilight Imperium.
Dude, does it not need like a full weekend to play that game?
Well, I believe Coco holds the office record of 52 hours playing Twilight Imperium.
Same game, not put away or anything?
Nah, same game. I think they took breaks, but they did play that game for 52 hours.
I'm kind of thinking you would have to.
Yeah. While I don't know when I'd find the time, I think a game like that just to do once would be a great experience. Mm. I think by the end of it, I'd be smelling colors and seeing sounds, but I'd love to give that a try.
Sam, your empire has fallen. Yay, bad.
Maybe we should do that as a charity live stream sometime. we keep playing the more money we raise.
You want to do a gaming marathon on OTT?
Yeah. Have you ever heard of, I think it's called Desert Bus for Life, run by the Loading Ready Run. They do it and they keep going playing Desert Bus, the most boring game the world has ever known.
Is it a video game?
Yeah, it's a video game.
All right, video games are easier because the video game knows the rules.
This is a video game where you have to drive a bus down a... from Las Vegas, I can't remember the destination.
But it's like a Euro Truck Simulator style game.
Except no stopping, no challenges. It's in real time. You have to drive there and drive back, and you get 1 point. In real time, and the whole thing pulls slightly to the left, so you can't just tape up the controller.
Lovely.
Yeah. And it's well known as the most boring game ever.
If you pull slightly to the left, do you not just set it so that you're driving slightly to the right and tape it up?
I think it has been done, but it does mean you have to actually, you can't just fall asleep at the wheel. Yeah.
Who would ever do that?
So, okay. Now, we come to our feature for this episode.
Yeah.
A Fabled Realms update. You got to talk with the guys at Foregrounding.
Yeah, so it's basically myself and Big Ben get to sit down and wax lyrical about everything Foreground has been up to recently. So we're going to be talking about what's been happening with Fabled Realms, what they're doing with their new game, and just in general, well, you know what Ben's like. It's just boom. Hey, everybody. I've been joined by Ben from Foreground, and we are having a bit of an update for you guys on what Foreground have been up to and what's been happening with the Legends of Fabled Realms.
We are indeed. So
busy?
Yeah, very busy, very busy. More in-house than we thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
But where we're at is quite exciting for us. So I think when we went, we took it to Kickstarter because we wanted to make sure that people, you know, if it's wanted, people will let us know.
Yeah.
We were really pleased with that. We were a little bit frightened it would go too far in one particular direction. And the most important thing for us was to get this this core group of people that would want to take this project forward and want to be involved with this project. Mm. And since that's happened, I think earlier this year we had the how to play with the people that had they'd actually invested that much that they came over here. We played the game with them. They had sets of miniatures of their choice that they took away with them.
And those lovely boxes.
Oh, well, yeah. And all the when we just had a really good time with that, and we really, really enjoyed that. What happened slightly before that is, so the Kickstarter, on the Kickstarter, we were saying to people, oh, well, we think it would be good with, when we said plastic, also it was like vinyl miniatures. Mm-hmm. Everyone has their reservations about that kind of a miniature, because sometimes you get some stuff from Cool Mini I've just seen with regard to Ice and Fire. Mm-hmm. Or Fire and Ice, whatever you want, and they're gorgeous. The plastic, I think, is the same stuff, but it's really nice, really hard. Mm-hmm. But in any case, so a lot of people are saying, "Oh, can we have the option to have resin?" So then we gave them the option to have resin, because, to be honest, I would have chosen the resin option. We're talking about 2 years ago as well, so it is a different kind of experience. When we got the plastics through, I know you saw them. We weren't happy with them at all.
This is something I actually spoke to John in the office recently about, is we're seeing more and more people do plastics, but a lot of those plastics are being done in like China and stuff.
They all are. There's only really one or two companies in this country, and it would be hard plastics they would use, yeah.
Yeah, and what I was saying to John was that whenever it's something so far away in such a different time zone, actually having that oversight on the creation of stuff is a lot more difficult than you would think. To actually make them understand the quality you want, the time frame you're working to. And I mean, like, let's say you miss an overview moment and the thing goes into full production.
Yeah.
The money's invested, the minis are being put out, and they're just not up to what you wanted.
The thing is, it's not so much the worry of the full production, because what you have is you have with anything, plastics, with the PVCs or anything like that, there is always the upfront payment, which is much higher than the manufacturing payment. So if you actually look at how much even a box of somebody's plastic miniatures cost, the actual cost of that box is hardly anything, but the cost to make the masters to make the box means that there is and you think how many of those units they will sell as a commercial product, there are many pounds or dollars, whatever, you have to get back for each box sold to be able to have paid for the metal
drop.
You've got a choice as well. When they engineer these molds, that they are going to either engineer them out of aluminium, in which case they tell you there is umpteen thousand, not that very many, but the cost comes right down. But you're talking about, for instance, the molds that we would have had to do, just for the starting molds, there was $20,000 went over there, and then there was to be another $20,000 when we go and actually produce the product. And we'd been given all the samples that they'd done before. We'd been given all the assurances that you can have, short of going over to China. That was one of the reasons for my reservations, but it's a three person project. It's myself, Cad, and Adam, who are two of my sons, and we were involved with this. And so we went forwards with this. When we got the samples, so our molds were made, and I think we had actually gone for the aluminium molds, not the steel molds, if you have a steel mold other than aluminium, it's almost like you can print these forever, or you can cast these forever.
Yeah.
Because aluminium does get fatigue. You know, the great thing about aluminium is it is that malleable, whereas steel is, it's either going to be there or it's just shattered.
Yeah.
So we knew that we were only going to be able to make several thousand from each mold, but we understood it all and we costed it all and we worked out that could happen. I always wanted to have the resin option. So I was really pleased because everyone got the resin option. And then the plastics came to us, and they were late, which, as you say, because somebody's late doesn't necessarily mean that they're doing a bad job, because people get overworked. And sometimes it's a good sign, because it means, oh, they're so busy, they're late.
Yeah.
You know, and I've had stuff drop on my door that's turned up late, and I've thought to myself, this is the most amazing example. This is more than I'd hoped for with this particular project moving forwards. These turned up late and we were getting a little bit stressed. Mm-hmm. So we spoke to Zealot, were doing the 3D prints for us.
Mm-hmm.
And we spoke to her over at Zealot, and we were saying, oh my goodness, we don't know what to do about this now. We're going to be sore and we really don't know what to do. So I got a friend who does resin casting for the company.
Yeah.
Very, very good at doing resin cast. Beautiful, beautiful casting that they do. Very, very detailed. And his name is Martin. I said, look, can we do this? And he looked at it and he says, yes, we can do it, but I need those masters. Talked to Zealot, and of course, they also have their own list of jobs to do. And they are one of the go-to guys when you want masters made in the industry as well. Mm-hmm. So it was, love to help you, can't.
Yeah, that's not
you haven't given me enough notice. It is literally, our machines are working all the time. We're doing everything we can. You can't and we appreciate this, and we never asked for it, but you can't then try and sort of like circumvent the loop and go in, say, yeah, but you know me. I in fact, we only live about, we, you know, 20 odd minutes away from each other.
Yeah.
The fact is they had that. So then...
you can't cut the queue.
No, you can't, because then you lose all credibility as well. Yep. Because, you know, so in whatever you do, you know, the flight pattern, them coming in, you can sometimes ask somebody, oh, can you hang fire for a week?
Yeah.
And then rearrange. But what you shouldn't do is rearrange and then tell them.
Yeah.
So he was straight up with us, and we fully appreciated him being straight up with us. And now we're completely stuck, because we have a situation where we're booked in with you guys. And yep. Again, studio time is very important, because although loads of us realize that you are a fantastic, the most amazing conduit to get our message out there to them, that means that you guys are forever busy.
Yeah.
You know, we will be doing a block of videos with you this week. We're here for a week. We're doing several each day, and they go out as and when they are required over the next few weeks. And next week there's somebody else in, or for 2 days there's somebody else in. Well, and you guys have to manage all these so that they're relevant to your feed.
Yeah, it's the greatest curse we have, because even as gamers, you know, company comes in, shows us a game, we like it, we love it, we want more of it.
You sent it to me the other day, weren't you?
Then
I want more
week,
of that. Oh.
Yep, next week, new company's in, new game.
I can see that happening with you guys, no doubt about it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's a shame, but it's something I love at the same time, because we're always seeing the new shiny stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I can see you guys, I know this is going to sound horrendous to you, but I can actually see you guys getting to the stage where you're going to have two studios working. I mean, I know you use, sometimes you use the cage, because so it is the other studio.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if you got two. I mean, I don't even know, have you
we had
that?
All three on the go.
You've had three on the go?
We've had all three on the go, because we had chat videos being filmed in here, we had gameplay being filmed in there, and we had Thomas Menes over for a visit doing some conversion work.
And that's exactly what where I think it's going more and more for you guys. So so yeah, I mean, I do sometimes feel that I am waiting for, we're waiting for that moment when it's we're free to land and speak in here, and people can maybe relate to that. But the same thing happens in a much longer time period of working. You know, it's amazing that there are big companies out there, but the thing is, with a big company out there that maybe everything is in-house, is also it can sometimes lose a little bit of its humanity, of its individuality. So, you know, we're very well aware that there's like this in the world that we exist, there's lots of flexibility, lots of moving, and everyone is a colleague, but no one is sort of like employed by the other. They're entities in their own right.
It's a weird thing we have in the industry.
It everybody, is. It's fun.
It's mates working together, yeah, more than anything. Because the longer I work with you guys, the more friendly we become. You know,
I mean, you've been over with it. You know, like you said, the West of England to you is the most island part of Britain.
Dude,
which they would agree with, actually.
I got back home, I'm dying for a pint of lilies. That's a still cider from there.
Anyway, yes, we appreciate that we can. We if we go to the best, we must expect them to be busy. That's bound to happen. So then Martin said, gave us this particular window where he could do these resin casts.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know, Ed told us with regard Zealot, they had issues that they just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
There wasn't enough hours in the day. There wasn't enough time for them to print the. And we're not talking about all of them. We're talking about the masters to cast.
Yeah.
So then, I'm like. I hate being defeatist.
Yes.
But I've had burnout a few times in life, and I'm definitely having the burnout sensation come over me.
I know that feeling.
And I'm really thinking, like, oh my God, beam me up, Scotty, what's going to happen now? So anyway, Cad went forward, and he decided to send some files over to some 3D printer manufacturers and said, can you send me back a sample?
Yeah.
I will buy one. In fact, we're looking to buy two like that, if you can buy one.
Yeah.
Now, we already knew that other studios, like, for instance, you know, the likes of Games Workshop, they have 3 or 10 or whatever it is, 3D printers now.
Yeah, rapid prototyping.
Yeah, so they can see what it looks like. So it's all very well when you design that thing.
Mm-hmm.
But all the designers, especially when they go to a production meeting, rather than saying, oh, here's the file, they'll go, there's the miniature.
Yeah.
So it's a rapid prototyping.
There is something to be said for seeing it on the screen versus being able to pick it up and just hold it right up to your eyes and look around the miniature.
Yeah, but it's the scale, you know. I mean, it's not like the photographs of it, oh, it's in someone's hand, so it's that side. It's in your own personal hand, and it's that
but
size.
If it's on a screen, they can zoom in super tight on this tiny little detail.
Yeah.
But until you actually see it on the miniature, will you know if it works? I mean, I'm looking down here, there's chainmail and stuff in there that I'm looking at. Would I be able as a painter to get through and paint that? Yeah, I think I could do that. Things like
That's it. And but anyway, sorry, I was going to go on. Imagine that, me on a tangent. So then we had that situation. So then we looked around. We were happy with the 3D printer that we were going to go with.
Mm-hmm.
And the backing, as far as the engineers are concerned, was good.
Yes.
We took on board this 3D printer, and we produced it, and we thought, you know what, this is quite good. And then we were, you know, we took it over to Martin and he said, who's going to clean them up? And then we were, you know, given the eyeglass and we thought, oh yes, you know, there's a lot that needs to be cleaned up because mm-hmm. you're layering on, even though it's a liquid resin,
yes.
you're layering it on at a level like something silly, like the length of two blood cells.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely all in microns, but it's yeah. just, but the most bizarre thing is because it's linear, mm-hmm. if it catches the light in a certain way, you really can see them.
Mm-hmm.
And that was interesting. So we were fiddling around with that. And then we'd like to claim all the credit for what happened, but there is a little bit of a story behind it because we can't claim all the credit for what we're really excited about now. But the thing is that, so we tried some different plate settings. And then the thing is we realized with these 3D printers is they're actually the same as the lasers we use.
Yeah.
It's just that they have a thread at the back that governs the Z axis. Mm-hmm. So if you think with a normal flatbed printer, it's X, Y axis, and then therefore yeah. it's a vectoring movement that creates that.
Yes.
Now with these 3D printers, they're doing exactly the same thing. So the laser hits the glass mm-hmm. and it cures just a tiny amount of the resin.
Yeah.
Then it has to break that from the glass
yeah.
in the way it works.
Yeah.
And then it brings it up a few microns yeah. and does another one.
Yeah, and then the liquid flows in.
Yeah. Well, no, the liquid cures. And yeah, so it then flows underneath it, yeah. cures again. So it's like it's like layers of toast in a way.
Yes.
I like the idea of the 3D. Remember the 3D cardboards, like of the I don't know, the Sphinx or something. And you used to be able to buy them and stack them up, and yes. they would just be like
yep.
scanned through. So it's working exactly like that, but on a micro level.
Yes.
And then so we were doing that. We realized how we could do that. We realized, we had to then make a decision, and it was about opening the box. Because, of course,
box.
As soon as you open anyone else's machine, then the warranty does, you just say goodbye to the warranty.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm guessing you guys didn't cheap out on the printer. I'm guessing you,
you
got
know,
the
you know,
chunk.
Oh, no, actually, be surprised what we got. We can talk about that another time, but okay. or maybe when you come over. But you do know Luke.
Yes.
And Luke is our laser gremlin. Actually, now he's actually he's a consultant for us now.
Well, consultant so gremlin.
He's a consultant gremlin, yes. which I'm really happy about because I've known him for a long time. But he's our go-to guy for quite a few things, and he's still going to, you know, when you come over next year, he's still going to be with us and that kind of thing. But Luke is, I mean, I call him a laser gremlin, or I also call him monkey boy, because if he doesn't have something to do,
yeah,
he will damage something. He'll go, oh, how does that work? Oh, I could do. So I always say used to make sure with Luke that he had projects,
yeah,
to keep him stimulated. Otherwise, it'd be like, oh, no. It's like, but it's great. And
so, would he take his work computer apart
honestly,
and go,
seriously,
I can put some new RAM in this?
Do you know Luke? In the things that he does, he's a lot of that is self taught. It's mind blowing when you figure it out, when you realize it. But it is really, he's just like, you know, you think of like a speed freak sort of goblin, or you know, and you go for the speed freaks. Oh, I'll plug that in. Oh, yeah, that'll work. I'll do. And he's just like that. And he loves doing it. So, Cad and I had to make the decision.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do? Do we let him in?
Mm-hmm.
And we thought, well, basically, we're already frustrated because we are going to have to tell you guys. I mean, Fabled Realms was always designed so you could use other people's miniatures.
Mm-hmm.
But these people that were coming to this event that they had paid money for, because although they were getting a good deal, it wasn't a cheap deal. They had to fly over here. They had to have accommodation. They you know, there was lots of expenses they had to make. So we were going to make sure they were going to have a happy time of it. That's why they got the toolbox and everything else like that. And no miniatures, and you can see why I'm definitely getting phased now.
Going,
yeah, and I'm going. Well, no, I'm going to that. No, I wasn't quite there yet, but almost. Because we were at the stage where we were thinking of having to phone you guys and tell everyone can't do it, and that would have been a nightmare because of your schedule. I mean, you'd have been polite, friendly, and a bit peeved. Because you would be, because it's film time, it's work time.
Yeah, but it's also the build up to an event like that would have been the crux of it.
Yeah, definitely.
But so what happened after that?
So then Luke does his little fiddling with it,
mm-hmm.
and we are impressed because what we've actually got now, we've ended up with a few more than the original one that we tried it with,
mm-hmm.
and what we've made is a more temperamental system. So therefore, you need it needs to be. It needs to have somebody to care for them on site.
Okay.
Rather more than these plug-in and play situations that you can get now. But the actual quality of the machine, the way it works, the resin that's actually supplied by the manufacturer, and those people who know the machines know what machine I'm talking about, because the resin that you actually get from them, it has a chip in the actual resin refill, which the printer can read, so it knows how much resin it's in there and whether it's going to run out or that kind of thing. And I can honestly say that the resin they have, we've had some amazing results with it. So the resin is more expensive than others you can get out there, but the failure rate of the material you're using is much less.
Yes.
Does that make sense? I don't know if it makes...
Yeah.
Okay.
So basically, then, higher cost resin, lower failure means better final product and less wastage. Yeah, because
resin is not white metal, so it can't be just cast... You know, resin, when it's cured, is cured. You're not going to actually try...
Yeah, you're not going to grind it down and put it back in the pot.
No. Yeah, it's not little plastic chips, as of course you can do with plastics nowadays. Yep. If you have gone off on a tangent, I know. So then you've got a situation where, so we were getting really good results. The CAD then realized that there is actually going to probably be another profession skill set that's going to come along, because you know how you have the mold makers that know how the white metal flows, and you know, so you've always got very good, you know, mold makers who know how to make the molds to get the best results from the sculpts.
Yeah, it's understanding where to put vent points that you can like extra flash a lot of it.
Yeah,
to get extra detail.
Yeah, a lot of it. So now we found that there is also definitely something which we've coined the phrase of a plate setter. Mm-hmm. And so if you imagine the plate is where so when you're looking at it on the monitor, you see this thing sort of balancing in the midair, and then you see the plate that it's going to be printed on, and then you decide how it's going to be there. You then do actually what's called auto scaffold, which is you press a button and it scaffolds it for you. And then from that, you've got a forest of scaffolding to help support it. This is that. If you look at that, that's the scaffold there on that on any of those, you can see. So these are printed upside down.
Yeah. So they'll
and they're literally hanging off of the plate as it dips into the. So the plate dips into the resin. The resin, the glass at the bottom of the resin is hit by the laser on an XY axis. That then is cured where it's hit. So this is why it takes so long, because the laser is doing a colouring in project with a few microns at a time in a way. And then it will, then the thread at the back, which is the Z axis, will lift it the required amount to do the next level and the next level.
Which is why the scaffolding is so important.
And that's why the scaffolding is so important, because you can't build off of thin air. Yeah. So that was, so with Luke, we were able to actually get it so that the thread doesn't turn quite as far as it did.
Ah.
So therefore, we're actually managing to now. Then what that has that, but then there are other. I will make out. I know what I'm talking about now. But Luke, which really needed to be here anyway. He fiddled with some bits, and what we found was the actual layers we could get closer together. And although it looked absolutely no different whatsoever, as soon as you put the eyeglass on it, well, I know I remember showing you at the beginning.
Yeah.
It's bizarre. It's so almost like the
stepping
eye.
But
it's really weird, because the stepping is still there. But now you've got a situation with the eyeglass, and this is a jeweler's eyeglass, and I think Warren did it as well, is you just can't see it. And I think, although it's still there, it's even beyond, and paint flows over it. It's so small that when you've undercoated, there is nothing there at all.
Yeah, you don't get the ripple effect that you sometimes get.
Yeah, that's right. And so this is the same as so you're getting the same quality as, you know, the orange wax print outs that you get that are amazing.
Yes.
You're getting the quality, to me, and you see the miniatures here, is the same sort of crisp quality that we're getting with it. So that was exciting. So we now had a situation where we could do the... We could send. We were so excited, and then we got our Luke made a UV box to cure the resin. So the resin when it comes out is very nice resin, and the light from the laser has cured the resin, but it's not cured enough yet. So it's it's still green. A term we'd use perhaps in some industries like building or mortar, definitely. Oh, that's still green. You know, that wall will fall over. So it's still green. And then what you're supposed to do is put it into what they call the UV box, and the UV light will actually cure the rest of the resin. Prior to putting it into the UV box, what you do is you put it into a bath of alcohol.
Secret sauce? Okay, I was going to say secret sauce.
This isn't secret sauce. No, you put in a alcohol, and the alcohol will remove all of the uncured sticky gunky stuff.
Yeah.
Think of Lurtz in Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings, when he comes out and he's covered in all gunky stuff. When you put him in that, he comes out all shiny. And then you put it into the UV box, and then it does its stuff in the UV box, and then you take it out, and then it's hard enough to go for resin casting. One of the things we found out is that as soon as you take out the UV box, It's brittle as, for goodness sake, you wouldn't believe how brittle it is. You wouldn't believe how brittle it is. And so, yes, it's strong enough to have a master made of it, but it's really, really fragile. It's like glass is actually, yeah, it's like glass. Murano glass, for those of you that have been to Venice. Really, really beautiful, really delicate, and almost touching it would worries you. And mm-hmm. So, which I found, that's why they use that orange wax. He's just got a girlfriend. Yeah, that's why they use that, is they get the better balance of the two. Mm-hmm. And then Martin couldn't do it because he's now too busy.
Aye.
So we're like, oh my God, what do we do? And then we just worked out how long it takes us to make them, how we were doing it. Oh, and when I said with regard to the auto scaffolding, what happens then is you have masses of scaffolding and you have to remove as much as possible. Mm-hmm. When you've moved as much as possible, you then have to realign scaffold because it will put scaffold, you know, it will put scaffold in someone's eye, in someone's tooth or their fingers.
Right on.
And you have to, so although you press auto scaffold, you're then probably some hours away from having the right thing, which I like the idea of, because I really think that 3D printing is going to become the norm in the industry, and I don't like making people redundant. I like the idea that skilled people will always be required. Yeah. The skill set might have to change, but as long as, you know, otherwise I worry that we'll end up in a world like, you know, Cyberdyne will tell us everything that's going to go on.
So this has been a real learning process production of these, because this stage now, you've looked at resin casting, and are you going resin casting, or are
the
you
the answer
doing...
is yes and no.
Yes,
the thing is that what we were really excited about is we realized to be able to get those few miniatures, each one as an individual resin 3D, unique 3D print, we would have to work them 24/7 and have at least one more. So we straight away had to get another 3D printer. We got another 3D printer in. We took the 3D prints to the people at the boot camp. So the boot camp, I mean, you're talking about 3D print. If that was 3D prints normally for a master, that could be anything, £200.
Yeah.
That one in your hand there.
Really?
Yeah.
And I dropped it.
Yeah, that one there would be £200, that 3D print. Or it might be, I bet, see what the cheapest one you'd probably get. If it's of the right quality, £120, and even then you're really not getting the ideal thing. So that's what we're talking about. That's how prohibitive it has been with 3D printing. Mm-hmm. And then from the stage on the left comes Luke, the laser goblin, and he says, "I could put these in a battery of 3D printers if you want, if we could have more." I said, really? Because so he said think of them as toasters.
Yeah,
I said, well, tell me more. And then of course we found out that could work. We worked out, did the numbers. We then, what we did with the Kickstarter backers is we said, hey, great news, you're going to have this most amazing, you're going to have 3D prints. Haha, bad news, it takes a long time to print them. Yep. But this is the best we think we can do. I mean, we'd already said that we'd found that there was a bit of a disjoint with the dicing system that we use. And so we use another dicing system that we use. And other people have actually said, although they were like, oh, I'm not sure about that, they really like the idea. Because this is our vanity project. This is not a commercial project. This is, we want to make the best game we can make.
Yeah.
And we're going to make the best.
It's a gamer's game.
It's a gamer's game, and it's a game where people are really confused because it's amazing. You can almost do exactly what you want whenever you want, and that's a little bit hard to get your head around. It's almost like you feel like you're in a real world kind of.
Yeah, it's almost real time strategy on tabletop.
Yeah. Yeah,
which
it is
interesting.
It is, and so, but then that's why we went in a particular direction. That then we have, you know, the rules. I think there's probably going to be a link here where they can go and look at the rules on the on the forum and give it a go themselves. The game is designed so you can play with other people's miniatures, so they can get out there and do it straight away. But the thing is that we found with these is we thought, well, how are we going to get it? Because all these guys who are at this event, they're all going to be getting these to play with. And so then we said to everybody, right, every single backer, we want to send you a miniature, which would normally cost you about anything from £120, £200. Because of the way we're doing it and everything else that we worked out, which I'll get onto in just a moment, the difference is that we're able to make them as production miniatures.
Yeah,
so we're now at the stage where we've got seven 3D printers working 24/7.
Wow.
Using a phenomenal amount of this very nice resin.
Yeah.
And we're producing miniatures. But what we did before we did that was we gave them an option of which dwarf they would like, and they gave the option.
Yeah.
And then that was the dwarf that we sent to everybody. Now, what we actually did with that is we changed the formula, and I'm going to talk about the formula because the magic secret juice that's nothing to do with Luke or anyone else. It's actually to do with the chemists that do our paints.
Really?
But so we sent them out, and then there was a different formula used for everybody who had it, slightly different, and we knew the addresses of those people.
Right.
And some of the people contacted us. Now, we didn't know there would be some catastrophic failures, but we thought there might be.
Right.
And some of them there were. Like, for instance, there was even some uncured resin in some of them, and the pressure built up so that it would seep out. So you had miniatures with little bits of resin dribbling through.
And you had crying dwarf. Yeah,
you had crying, but you'd have crying armpits, so it's not quite as exciting, you know, or elbows or whatever. So it's not quite as, that's amazing.
Yeah.
But we knew what the formula was for those. And sure enough, those people that had that issue, and we said, if you have any issues, let us know.
Yeah.
And then we'll replace it for you.
Yeah.
Some people seem to be the odd number out of the batch that needed another one, but you're always going to get that.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The vast majority of people were up front with exactly what was wrong. They even sent us photographs, and we could tell exactly which was the best formula to use.
Yeah.
Now, these have gone all over the world like this. Yeah. These are 3D prints. They're still on their scaffold, because the great thing about the scaffold is it actually protects them. And I know I've talked before, and we're going to talk again about how to remove them from this scaffold, but you don't get all the mold lines now of a resin cast necessarily.
Well, it's not molded.
It's not. The scaffold is actually held on by about, I think it's 300 microns each dot. So you're talking about a third of a millimeter. The dot that it's built off of is a third of a millimeter. And very easy to remove. I know you've had some experience of these and also converting with these.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The resin that we use, we found out we could do something different with the resin. And that's because we were talking to the chemists who are behind, you know, the paints and things that we do and everything else. And they were saying about, we could use, you know, and we were saying to them about the trouble is it's brittle and we use UV light. And they go, well, why use UV light? And I said, well, because
that's what you're meant to do.
Use UV light. He says, no. He said, all you're trying to do is, why don't you chemically cure them?
Mm.
And I'm going, okay, let's talk about the chemical curing process. And so this is where, although we own our paints, you know, the paints that we use for our lasers, that actually, the formula in that is so we can laser print with that. That's why you see companies that do 3D printing and laser printing, and they say you can have it pre-colored, and then all of a sudden you can't. It's because it will destroy the machine or kill them. That is actually a fact.
Yeah, well, then, like, whenever you're laser cutting, you're literally vaporizing the paint and whatever chemicals are in there.
So therefore, you're making volcanic ash. And any of the paints that we use as the emulsifiers, so they're using, you know, whoever's doing it is using emulsion paints, which is the same as an emulsion paint that you would get in so much as the name is the same as one you'd get from a Home Depot or B&Q, something like that. But the actual emulsifiers in it are doing a completely different job because it's a chemical. That's the chemical concoction to enable the emulsifying to work. With our paints, what you've got is you've got high pigment level. That's why the colours are quite strong, which means more volcanic ash in a way. Yep. But also the emulsifier that they use won't kill our staff, won't mean that when we get our exhaust tested by trading standards or health and safety that we're killing the world.
Environment,
and it won't, more importantly, for the people that own the laser, won't. The acid, it produces acids otherwise, and it will eat your machine away, also damage your lenses. So these are the guys that we went to for that process, and these are the same chemists who say, we can do that for you. Obviously, you'll know. I don't know what's in the formula. I don't know what's in the formula of the paints that we've been using for 6 years. I don't know what's in, but I know it does the job we want it to do.
Yes.
So now you know we have the alcohol bath, and we clean the model. So once we've cleaned it off, it doesn't go into the UV light box. It goes into the clean alcohol bath with the... Will it call it
secret sauce?
Yeah,
secret sauce.
Typical Lucism, that is, isn't it? Yeah,
secret sauce.
And then, literally, what's amazing, and I try and describe it as like a conditioner.
Mm.
So as well as it curing it, it also gives you the flexibility. I know when I came here before,
I showed you some
are really rubbery. Yeah, some are really rubbery. Now, then the thing is that as they said to us, and beware, you know, at the strike of 12 o'clock, what they actually said to us. Now, remember, this raw material, if it's even now, if it's exposed to UV light, it will become more brittle.
So it will continue to cure?
So it will cure. But these ones, we found that they're in studio lights, office lights, that's fine. As long as you're not growing internal house plants that need a UV light to grow well, you'll be fine because it's not the UV light. But if you put them by the window, they will become more brittle. So what we say to people is when you get them, keep them in the packaging, or when you take them out, clean them off and you're worried that they might be exposed to daylight, just clean them off, undercoat them, and they're good to go. You can leave them then because the undercoat
gives you that barrier.
The undercoat is the factor, whatever sunscreen.
Yeah.
So that means that we can now dial the numbers. We're actually, just to let you know, we're actually working on 3D printing some tires at the moment.
Tires?
Black rubbery tires. which is really quite good, actually. But if you think, I know it just sounds silly, but yeah, if you think about it, but the only time I ever get a chance to use the thing is there is a window on a Sunday, because I know that we say we're working 24/7. There's actually a small window on a Sunday where I can put something on quickly because I've got a project that I want to try and make it work. Mm. And yeah, I'm quite interested in that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's gone off on a tangent again. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
Cut a long story short. So people thought they were going to be getting their Kickstarter at last September. This year's September.
Yes.
But what we actually did was everything that we could produce, we kept them fully informed. Everything that we could produce in-house.
Yeah.
So all of the add-ons. The train went to them in two hits. So you had the train go out to them because it was already being made. It was already current product.
Yeah.
And that went to everybody of the 400-odd backers. And then we had all the terrain where they'd shown the pre-production samples and they said, yeah, I like that one. Oh, I'm going to have that one. Or I get that one free because I did this, that, or the other.
Yeah.
All of that was then finished produced. So then there was another mailing to everybody. So everybody had within a very short period of months, all that they had ordered with regard to that.
Yeah.
Then we sent everybody a dwarf so they could all make the decision. Because it's all, even at this stage, it's difficult. I know Kickstarter is about if you would like this dream to come to, or initially it was, if you'd like this dream to come to fruition, come and help me. But people have tended to feel it's more become, and rightly so in some ways, because the industry has made it more of a pre-order kind of thing. It's a mixture.
It's more of a selling platform than pre-order, I would say these days.
Yeah, all right. And selling, I don't have anything against anyone or how they do their business, because as long as people are up front, if things went wrong for them, they tell you.
Yeah.
I think when people get concerned sometimes, you know, I was talking to you about the sort of like the meltdown moment, and they can sometimes feel like a rabbit in headlights. And so although you would say, why aren't these people communicating? I can say that because we've kept up good communications all the time. But I understand where those companies are coming from. And it is very stressful when something that's gone wrong is not their fault.
Yeah.
With our Kickstarter's late because we've actually chosen for it to be later. We weren't happy. We'd already paid for the molds and we've had to cancel those.
Yeah.
We weren't happy with what we were going to produce. Now, so we then sent out the people, all the dwarves, and we got some good feedback from that. And now, because we are really happy with the process, we have now got it so that everybody who is a back the Kickstarter and also the late backers, they all are getting three goblins this Christmas.
I see.
I can tell you this now because I know I confirmed with CAD that everyone who's backing us has been sent in their mail the fact that this is what's happening to them. An update on when the game is coming. We also, because of for whatever reason, we also missed our date for the rules to be printed now. So we've got a new date for when the rules come through and everything else. As a thank you to people, we are sending them three goblins.
Yeah, so these
they're gorgeous. Those. Now, we actually think these three goblins, when they go to retail, the pack with the cards and everything else will probably be about £20. So even the original box that I think they got for £40, you're talking about a lot more money now. But the models are so beautiful, we don't mind. And, you know, we're happy for that. So because there's quite a few miniatures and every single miniature in the game is a unique. So it's not, none of them are doubling up. If you want to double up things and if you don't want to use the miniatures, you can substitute any miniatures. Like, I mean, talking about Kickstarter again, there's plenty of games that I've got that when they actually turn up, I was desperate to play it, but now it's turned up. I've got all these miniatures and I've not got an overarching desire to play the game they came from.
Yeah, well, it's one of those things you find on Kickstarter is you have to stay engaged with everybody.
Yeah,
so
it's
you
hard.
See even something like this,
where
it's just like, okay, we're still running a little bit behind, but here's something for you to play with and work on now. Sorry, we're late.
Yeah.
It's a really great way to do things, I think.
And I can tell everyone now who has backed us, and I don't know if that went out to them, is that everyone is getting now the same special sauce quantity. In their miniature, which it has enabled it to be cured to a level that we're happy with. We think this represents the best resin we could get in the normal traditional way, which is where, you know, people like Martin are mixing the formulas, mixing the compounds together. Will we still produce things in resin in the normal casting way? Most definitely, yes. I mean, I know everyone who's going getting the Terror, they're all getting a 3D printed one. What will happen is when that goes into production, you'll find the majority of the torso becomes a resin cast.
Yeah.
And the fingers and the, I mean, these miniatures have fingers and fingernails and ears and everything else like that. And those bits will probably be 3D printed. And also you could find in the future that you will have Some bits of a model will be resin cast, and those bits where the people that you know, again, their companies, their businesses, where you get something and you think you might get some failure rate, what you do is you work out the failure rate and add that into the cost. So you're wanting 100 of something, and I know that I'm only going to get one in, say, I'm going to get two in three. So I'm going to give you the price for what it was to cast 150 of them, 50 of which would just go in the bin. Whereas for us, we're still getting a failure rate. In fact, there are awesome models. So we think one day we're going to offer the failures for a very small sum of money, and people can go, "Oh, yeah, I'll have that one," because it's just, I don't want to throw them. I just don't want to throw them away, because sometimes it's just because the scaffold wasn't quite done right. And then because these are like toasters and they do it over many hours. I mean, we can get two or three plates on a one machine done in a 24-hour period. Sometimes if it's a very long one, you might just get the one plate done and there might be a downtime of like 4 hours, for instance. But the way we're working this out is not how long it takes for the machine to do it. And with Foreground, it's very much the way we do everything, even with our, as a contract laser cutting company. So you have to pay for the machine. And when we went to get the other five lasers, we got a commercial lease because commercial company. So now we've worked out in the running time how much it would take to pay for those leases and everything else. But then the only added cost then is the you can make it sound very automated, like the human interface time. So now it's about it's on for 18 hours, and then it stops, and then this person then comes in, and they will then take them off that plate. They will then put a new plate in, and then they'll do that to the other one, to the other one, to the other one. Then they will go with all these plates. And so what we are doing is, rather than having to cost the time it took to make it, so rather than costing the 18 hours, we work out the cost and then add to and all the fixed costs, like the unit that it's in, the building it's in, and then we add the human interface time, and that means that instead of it costing hundreds of pounds, it's now costing, you know, comparable with there's a resin company out there that is very well known, Forge World, and they can only get about 10 impressions from their molds before they have to do another mold. And that's why it's so expensive.
Yeah, and as well as that, sometimes Forge World molds, they don't work too well. I've had stuff before from Forge World where there have been problems.
But what I'm actually saying is that you know, if you think about a mold, and I was talking earlier about aluminium lasting thousands and steel lasting forever, normally you can get... What normally happens with a resin mold is they will make the master mold, and then from the master, they'll make a number of masters for when they have to make a new mold. So they will be literally, they will be, the masters used will be the first impressions of the original master.
Yeah.
And these will be kept in a drawer somewhere and everything else. And when the mold finally deteriorates or the master is no longer available, they'll go to one of these originals and they'll make a second generation mold. But that they may have been able to do 100, 200, 1,000 more casts from that one mold because of the detail that Forge World require and people like them. They can only really use that for 10 times before they have to make a brand new. And that's part of the, you know, I don't work for the company, never have, but I do love what they do. And I do know what you're saying. It's also very skill intensive. So if ever there is a situation where there is a mistake made, it's normally big.
Yeah. And it's one of those things, because if you're going for a fourth, fifth generation mold, you know, where it's a copy of a copy of a copy, you are going to get degradation between that every time.
Well, you will, yes. But I mean, and also with them, they're a great company for actually saying, what's the problem? I will send it out to you.
So they are very good for that.
So what I like about this is that you are getting the original, the original mold is now a file.
Yeah, you're getting a Gen 1. It's the way I described it to you when you first produced it and showed it to us was, it's a 3D master production process that you guys have engineered.
And I mean, one of the things that you were talking to us at the time, which just to round off, just to bring you up to speed, is that you said, wouldn't it be lovely if you could, although these are nice, as a painting canvas, to produce, say, one in 40 mil scale or you know, 32 mil tall, whatever, and actually have those, as I think you called them master prints or something. Your original idea was that. And we've actually looked at the feasibility of that, and we don't have a problem. Apart from one of the designers says, "Oh no, please don't do that. I don't think the details would be good enough if you make it that much bigger." That was Giorgio, who lives in Nottingham, and it's like, you must be joking, mate. These are just so amazing. You could blow them up, but you know, So we're really pleased with them. As far as when it's all coming out, we've got with one thing that is a definite fact is every single thing that came on that was available on the Kickstarter to people, they will have it in their hands before any retailers get a chance, a sniff at it.
Again, this is an absolute
I understand why some companies do that. I'm actually not going to comment on that at the moment. It's just something that we don't need to or we don't want to do. As far as all, so what they actually got was they got the starter kits.
Yep.
And then they got the add-ons. We unlocked a considerable amount of miniatures. Bear in mind, every single miniature in this game is a unique sculpt. Mm-hmm. And we unlocked a shed load. And every one of those are then meant for a particular monthly release. Yes. They will get it at least a month early. So the only the only extra cost, again, is on our postage.
Yeah.
And they
it's
make
nice
it
to see you guys are just cycling that.
And then once we get through those, we would have already, we're already talking to the sculptors about the next lot of sculpts. We're, we're not going to be a mass producer of these miniatures. We are going to have a boutique level of the occasional.
You want something that's just the latest character. He is an actual character.
Yeah.
He feels like he's living, breathing in the world, not just random plebe.
Well, yeah, because we, I mean, we've got some really nice but really expensive miniatures, but then we also show people how you can download the rules for free, for free, download the cards for free and put them in your own deck protectors and use other people's miniatures, especially with the amount of plastics around these days.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you can mix and match.
Oh, yeah.
And you make some lovely, lovely appropriate looking miniatures. I was thinking then in my head, because I often do think in my head and not let it all out, you might think it all comes out, but I was thinking of, I was talking to Lloyd about how that he's mixing different plastic manufacturers bits and pieces to get his Polish Fasaga. And that's really what we're talking about. We're talking about, you know, bit of the hobby itself.
If you find a particular kit that really works and you think really fits with the world, just grab the kit, build them up.
Yeah, definitely.
Start them up in the world. I mean, like, I found the Shield Maidens. Now,
that was, but what was interesting about that, those, your Shield Maidens, of course, was because there is actually a sellsword unit that actually people don't know that, I mean, they're wicked kind of thing, you know, which is a faith that they have. And so, yeah, that worked perfectly. They are really nice miniatures.
Yeah, but it's being able to game in the gaps and find that.
Yeah.
So, final thing then. Where is the production looking at today?
So as far as miniatures are concerned,
yes,
I can tell you for a fact, which that one, for a fact, we will, people, the starter kits, so the ones that were the box sets with all the bits, they will get the box sets with all the bits that were supposed to go with the box sets definitely before Salute. Now, I do not believe the game will even be on sale at Salute.
I see.
Even the starter boxes, it may or it may not. We will actually be in communication with our backers as to whether they would like the idea of it or not.
Yep.
We're not stopping people from playing with it, obviously, because everything can be done via the forum in any case, or downloads. But then the important thing to remember then is that then they will, you know, the first month it goes to retail, you will find that at the end of the month, there will be the add-ons that were coming out.
Yep.
And so they will probably go with the first offering to these people. Mm-hmm. Now, then, although we would have, because you're in a situation where even though you've produced all these things, and we would have actually got to the stage where we've produced it all, you don't want to release it out. You want to make sure you're doing the best that you can with it, if that makes sense. So it means that they will always have it early. No matter how many times we have to send it to them, they will always have it early.
Yep.
It will be done to the best of our ability. Yep. And that's why we like giving them these things, like the you know, they had the elf, the, and now they've got the goblins, three Christmas goblins, because we really appreciate them. And it's nice to do. And it gets you really excited again. Yeah.
Again, it's that it keeps you engaged.
Yeah. And if you notice, our lady goblins, actually, our male goblins, they have fat noses. And the lady goblin, she has a thin nose.
Ah.
So it's a representation of both kinds of goblin-y kind of people. She's got a bit of a sort of a witch about her. And our goblins, as our goblins get older in our world, they get fatter noses. So they end up with a bit sort of like a, you know, big fat nose. And the women are really pointy and they're quite grumpy.
So, all right. Well, Ben, thank you for giving us the update on the Legends of Field
Realms.
Thank
you very much for asking.
Everybody, I tell you what, if you have any questions about the project, if you're a backer, if this is something you're considering jumping into when it finally hits market, give us a shout in the comments below. I'm sure the guys would love to hear from you.
Or even on the forum. Mm-hmm. But here is a good place, because the more often you can talk about any gaming subjects in the same place. I mean, I know I like to, I'm not going to tell you who I am, but I do like to come here and comment sometimes. Always nice.
Yeah, but we'll see you in a bit, guys.
Cheers, guys.
Hi, everybody. It's Dawn.
And Gianna.
And from the US studio, we want to wish everybody a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Nice sweater.
Thanks, right? You're just jealous.
I always love sitting down to chat with Ben because it's just you have anarchic. To rein him in sometimes, but it's always fun.
It's no fun at all reining him in. You have to kind of just steer him in the direction you want him to. Just kind of say things like Rook's Drift and again, or Andy, you're never getting that Roman fort.
Oh, harshness. But no, I am excited to see what happens whenever Field Realms finally lands with everybody. And it's great to hear that the way Foreground did it, everybody got their stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so the buildings and the stuff that Foreground already produced was instantly sent out to them so that they're just waiting on the miniatures to be made.
Yeah. Not that I've assembled anything that they've sent out to me. It's all still sitting in bags, you know.
This seems to be the story of your life.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
You know, there's a TV series I watch where it's people who are hoarders who are just stuck within all of the stuff they've collected. I imagine walking into your
rookies.
Place just
they
like
are rookies.
A warehouse.
Oh, yeah.
You know, everything's sorted and organized and it's just walls of boxes.
Boxes are great. The only problem is I'm running out of rooms. Not room, rooms.
Now, do you date your boxes so that you can say, okay, this is the oldest you can now go?
No, that's not how we work. Everything just gets sort of put on top of each other. And then when I want something, I go, didn't I have a peri-Roman army from Foundry? I'm pretty sure I did. Then you go hoping till you find it. But what actually happens is after 2 or 3 hours, you found something else, got distracted. You go, ooh. Shiny. What I found now. Who knew the Gripping Beast did a Russ army? Oh.
That's exactly like me in front of my bookshelves when I need reference material. Yeah. I go in looking for a specific piece for a story and I find myself reading a book about the history of the word pool in regards to a game of snooker.
Nice.
Yeah, stuff like that.
So Fable Realms, I should have pestered him more when he was here about it. Yeah. Just to find out what was going on.
Well, I was quite excited. I actually got the first game I've had a chance to play against Ben and Cad. Not of Fable Realms, unfortunately, which I really, really want to play Fable Realms. But we played a little Christmas card game with them. So you can and look forward to seeing that within the next week. Mm. It was a real laugh, though it was a struggle sometimes to just like, come on, Ben, the game. Moving on for our Kickstarters, just time for one quick Kickstarter this week, I think.
Yeah. And this one actually leads in really nicely to your idea of doing a charity live stream, because if we did that, I would be using this to keep us on track the whole time.
Okay. Well, do you want to introduce us to it?
Yeah, sure. So this is something we've talked about before. The guys at Dized are currently on Kickstarter. So this is basically an app that you can download to your phone that teaches you how to play different board games. And so, as you can see, the problem is your group is gathered, snacks and drinks are out, everyone's excited for game night, but you don't know how to play. And this is where it's taking away having that one person in your group who always has to get the game and learn the game before you get to play the game. That, and they do them fully voiced. So I actually have this app on my phone.
This app is currently on early access. It has a couple of games on it.
Yeah. There's one I'm really looking forward to playing, which is Blood Rage. But they actually have a thing in this where whenever you open the app, it asks you, is this the first time you've opened the game? And if you hit yes, it tells you how to set up the game box.
Okay.
With the fully voiced stuff. So I've got my favorite one here.
Let's see if it works.
Take the rule book out of the box and offer it to the gods as a sacrifice. We don't need it anymore.
See, I love the idea that it's fully voiced. You're not having to sit there and read. It's just, it feels like that person who used to have to learn all the games has now been digitized and is doing the work for you. But you've got full round breakdowns, full animation on what you're doing, how you're doing it. And I know this is going to sound horrible, but it spoon feeds it to you in a way where it's easy to get onto.
Hmm. This is actually something I'm very excited to give a try myself because I am atrocious at learning rules. I am really bad at learning rules.
Yeah.
So having something like this means I don't have to just keep... whenever I buy a game, I don't have to drive all the way to my friend Andy's and go, here's the rule book. Learn it for me, please.
Yeah, but you've also had those moments. I've had those moments where I open a board game and it's just like, oh my God, there's so many bits. What do I do with these? You know, taking that away whenever you're punching stuff off out of the sheets and stuff and knowing what it is because the app is telling you it is something that's a huge help.
Hmm. You just made me flashback to the old fighting... Fantasy Flight version of the Warhammer Fantasy role-playing game.
Yep.
That box.
Tokens for days.
All those tokens.
They do like their cardboard.
Yeah. Okay. We're...
My hat's itching.
So how's this working then? Are they buddying up with a couple of game producers or...
Well, I'll open the app again here and I'll show you.
So, as we said, this is still early access. They are adding features and games.
Yeah, so at the minute you've got Ice Cool, Blood Rage, and Queen Domino, or is it King Domino?
King Domino.
Yeah.
They have rules.
Tilt the screen.
Yeah, they have rules, which are like, the digitized rule book and an FAQ. I think you can even search them for werewords, feudum, Documus. I'm trying to read this here.
It's all right. Bring it up and I'll go through it. Yep.
And then the tutorials for those three that we saw earlier.
Yeah. And so some of them you are going to have to buy eventually, I believe. But I believe those three that I mentioned are just available to download at the minute to give it a go and see what you think of it. So it's something I want to do in the new year. I want to get a group of folks to sit down with me, play Blood Rage with the app teaching us.
Yeah, it'll definitely be an interesting one. We did get a chance to speak with the guys behind Dized at Essen this year. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to seeing how this goes.
Yeah, and the number of people that they're getting to work with is ever expanding. So I think that's not even the full list. If I click here, it should be the full list.
List of interested publishers.
Yep. So there's a lot of folks, a lot of big names there that you will know and have games that you love from. And if there's maybe a game that a company has made that you've always wanted to learn, but say there, some companies, their games are great, but sometimes the rule books are a little bit hard to get through. This also helps with that as well.
Yeah. The one downside of this, of course, is it means Ryan is going to have less to do in the office because we won't have to pile him with a bunch of rule books every week.
Then he can make more videos.
Ah, good point.
So we can load him up with other work. I can front load this.
Okay, competition time.
Yes,
we've had a bunch of giveaways last week. First of all, there was a Tanks the Modern Age starter set that was given away on the Let's Play with Freddie and John.
Yes,
and there was also the Ninth Age Pledge.
Yep.
And a foreground 6x4 Dark Age table. Those last two were from last week's weekend.
Yes.
Those are all in the claim a prize section. So if you just want to go to ontabletop.com, head up to the more button, drop that down, hit claim a prize, and you should find all the details there.
Yeah, just scroll to the bottom of that page, which is where that list is.
Now for this week, we have quite a good Christmas present for you guys.
Well, it'll be a late Christmas gift.
Yeah. For this week, you get... your choice of two getting started sets for Warhammer 40K or Age of Sigmar.
All right, let me clear this up, please do. Because we have two prizes up for grabs. Two lucky winners are going to gain their choice of a getting starter set for Warhammer 40K. So you each get one of your choice.
Yep. So that will nicely set you up for the new year. If you're looking for something to work on for your New Year's resolutions.
Yep. Or if you have a friend who you're wanting to get the claws into, you just go, here, have an army.
Yeah. So if you want to be in with a chance to win one of those, be sure to leave a comment below either here at On Tabletop or on YouTube. Okay. In the meantime, if you want to see more of us, Sir Orkin, be sure to join us tomorrow for... our XLBS, where we'll be discussing our New Year's resolutions, stepping outside of our comfort zone a bit in the coming year, and how we can stick to those resolutions.
Hashtag New Year, New Me.
Yep, ways to stick to those, because of course, we all know the sin of buying that gym membership in January and never having been, well, it's May.
I don't buy gym memberships.
Yeah, well... buying new armies then and seeing them staring at you from the shelves, grey and unpainted,
my shame.
Unloved.
My shame. My shame. Bye, guys.
That's the rule in life.
So in the meantime, it's been great having you all along for the shows. And we reading your comments, reading your feedbacks. Thank you all so much. In the meantime, we're going to carry on. Have
Merry
a great
Christmas.
Year of gaming and Merry Christmas.
It's a good look. It's the Dread Elf.
Go ahead and check out our other content on screen now, and be sure to check out beastsofwar.com for the latest gaming news and gaming Let's Plays. And while you're at it, why not hit subscribe and remember to ding our dong. Go on, you know you want to click it. Go on.